I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. The fallout from the Healthy Holly debacle continues as the scandal draws national attention. The state prosecutor has opened an investigation, and the Maryland Insurance Commission has promised an inquiry as well. The Maryland Automobile Insurance Fund is the latest group to be implicated in the scandal. The Associated Black Charities funneled at least $5,000 in MAFE money into the private company owned by the mayor. The Baltimore Board of Ethics will also discuss the matter in a meeting this afternoon. Today on Midday, reactions from Baltimore City Council members Zeke Cohen and Sharon Green Middleton, perspective from former city solicitor George Nielsen, and for a view from Annapolis, Baltimore City Delegate Nick Mosby. They join me when Midday gets underway after these headlines. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. It's been 2 days since Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh announced that she'd be taking an indefinite leave of absence due to what a statement described as deteriorating health. She is recovering from pneumonia and taking a leave of absence on the advice of her physicians. There are several elected officials advising her to resign altogether. City Council President Jack Young is now serving as the city's ex officio mayor. City Council Vice President Sharon Green Middleton has assumed the duties of City Council President. I'll speak with Ms. Middleton later in this broadcast. The latest developments in this unfolding story since our program yesterday, Linda Pearson, the chair of the Baltimore Board of Ethics, said the board would discuss the sales of books by Mayor Pugh to the University of Maryland Medical System and others in a closed meeting scheduled to be held this afternoon. The Baltimore Sun reports that Ms. Pearson confirmed that the Associated Black Charities notified the Ethics Board of donations it had received for the purpose of purchasing Ms. Pugh's books. In addition to CareFirst, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, those groups include the Maryland Auto Insurance Fund. Ex officio Mayor Jack Young held a brief press conference yesterday at City Hall, promising to continue to work for the city and that the work of the city would continue. He did, however, indicate that he would hit pause on some of the initiatives championed by Mayor Pugh, including a multi-million-dollar neighborhood reinvestment program. Ms. Pugh's lawyer has confirmed that the state prosecutor, Emmett David, has opened an investigation into the mayor's book deals, and the Sun also reported that Frank Kelly and members of his family are all taking a leave of absence from the medical institution boards on which they currently serve. Those boards include not only UMMS, but St. Joseph Medical Center, Shock Trauma, and others. Mr. Kelly is a former state senator who has built a successful insurance company that does business with several local medical institutions. Later in our program, reactions and context from George Nielsen, who served as the Baltimore City Solicitor in 2010 when then-Mayor Sheila Dixon resigned from office as part of a plea agreement in her conviction on misdemeanor corruption charges. We'll also hear from Nick Mosby, who now serves in the Maryland General Assembly. He ran against Catherine Pugh in the 2016 Democratic primary. Failing to gain traction in that race, Mosby dropped out and endorsed then-Senator Pugh. But first, the perspective of two members of the Baltimore City Council. We'll speak with Councilwoman Sharon Green Middleton in a little bit. But first, Zeke Cohen joins me on the line from City Hall. He represents the 1st District. Councilman, welcome back.
Honored to be here with you, Tom.
You were one of the first people to call for the resignation of Mayor Pugh. That's a big move. Mayor Pugh was elected by the citizens of Baltimore, and to remove her from office and replace her until the next election with ex officio Mayor Young is a big step. Why did you make that statement as early as you did?
So just to be clear, Tom, this scandal unfortunately touches a number of institutions, and one of the things that we've said really early on is that it can't just be about one individual, but all of the different institutions and structures that led us to this point. So the relationships between folks on the board of UMMS and their ability to leverage their public office to enhance their own profit, and that, again, is not just Mayor Pugh. The some of what we now understand that Kaiser and other entities were involved in while they were seeking contracts. I think it's really important for this city that we have clear structures and systems and institutions in place so that citizens know that there's not any sort of quid pro quo. As far as calling on her to resign, I think at this point, the city needs to be able to move forward. I know that so many of our communities want to see better from Baltimore, that there is a hunger and a thirst for a better day in our city. And I feel that with my colleagues and ex officio Mayor Young, we want to move forward. We want to bring Baltimore into a new day. And having this over our head is a major challenge.
Have you spoken to the mayor in the last 10 days, 2 weeks?
I spoke briefly to the mayor a little while ago. She's obviously very sick. And look, my thoughts and prayers are with her. I know she's got a really serious case of pneumonia. And so we're all praying for her and her health. But again, I remain concerned about what this does to Baltimore and what it does to, institutions like healthcare and education that should really be, when there's contracts going out, it should be in the public's best interest. And it's why I think taking a structural look at some of these institutions and how through being able to steer contracts and have board members that are not acting on the behest of the public has created some real questions. So I think this is deeper than just Mayor Pugh. This is about Baltimore. This is about Maryland. And this is about having a system that folks can place their faith in.
Well, you're absolutely right that the mayor is battling a condition that's not at all insignificant. Pneumonia is serious business medically, and we all wish her the best of health. But how many days ago did you speak to her? And when you had that conversation, did you encourage her to resign?
No, it was about 5 or 6 days ago, I believe, that I spoke to Mayor Pugh. It was before I had learned about, it was before we had learned about the contracts that Kaiser Permanente was able to receive, and in exchange, but while books were being sold. To me, that is what crossed the line in that.
So UMMS was one issue, but that in and of itself would not have been enough to have you encourage her to resign, but you think Kaiser Permanente was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back?
Well, so again, I think in both cases, there needs to be a full and thorough investigation. There needs to be some real structural reform. What was particularly disturbing to me about Kaiser Permanente is that that insurance company was seeking a contract from the city of Baltimore before the Board of Estimates. And for folks that don't know, the Board of Estimates is a 5-member board. 3 of the votes on the Board of Estimates are really either appointed by the mayor or are the mayor. And so it is really important that folks disclose any sort of potential conflict of interest when they are voting on contracts. And so to me, to not disclose that there had actually been purchasing of books and some financial dealings just is a huge, huge red flag. And just, again, speaks to a need for some really deep structural reforms beyond any one specific individual. We need to take a hard look at all of these structures. I know one of my colleagues asked for the Inspector General to take a look at Kaiser and that contract. I know that the ex officio Mayor Young is asking for a review of all contracts in the last 90 days. And I think that it is prudent for us as a city to really have a hard look at what's been going on And then what are the deeper structural reforms, whether it's charter, whether it's city code, that can put us in a place where we're not back here in a couple of years worrying about these types of infractions?
Ryan Dorsey is the colleague that's asked the Inspector General to look into the Kaiser Permanente deal. Shannon Sneed is also called for the City Office of Inspector General to investigate this. There, of course, is an investigation underway. We now know from the state prosecutor. Is it necessary to have parallel investigations from a city agency and a state agency at the same time? Is it going to matter that these two things are going on concurrently, or would it be okay if just the state, for example, took over the inquiry?
So I think that both the state and the city are potentially implicated in all of this. And so I actually do think it is prudent for all of the resources, both at the state and city level, to be brought to bear. And again, I think what we really need to do is take a step back. As we move forward with the immediate investigations and think about how we got here, think about whether public goods like healthcare and education, when they become privatized, what that does. Think about sort of how I know that one of my colleagues, Councilman Burnett, is very passionate about campaign finance reform and making sure that in our democracy, everybody has an opportunity to run and that financial interests aren't able to sway influence. I know for me, one of the things we worked on was the Transparency and Lobbying Act to try and make it very clear to the public who is lobbying and why they're coming in here. So I think an overall structural look at where we are is really smart. And that's where I see ex officio Mayor Young going right now. And I think the council is right there as well.
And the press conference that you and the rest of the council held with ex officio Mayor Young yesterday was very brief. He spoke for less than 5 minutes. He did say that, you know, the work of the city would continue, but he mentioned that there are a couple of things that he was going to hit the pause button on. At least one of them is a $52 million neighborhood reinvestment program. I had Mike Braverman on the show a week ago, the city housing commissioner, and he spoke glowingly of this. This was a very important initiative in developing affordable housing for folks in Northwest and Northeast. How many programs are you talking about putting on hold, and what does that mean? What does hold mean? I mean, what's the time frame that you're thinking?
Yeah, so again, I don't want to speak for ex officio Mayor Young. I do know that in speaking to some of his staff before I came on today, that I think there are conversations about the Neighborhood Investment Fund, but he and we still see it as a potentially important instrument to try to create more permanently affordable and mixed income housing. This is actually the first year that we've been able to fund our Affordable Housing Trust Fund. And we know that so much of the violence in our city is driven by racial segregation and deep economic despair.
So what's achieved by stopping the program right now?
I don't think my understanding is that the program is not going to be stopped, but there's a call for a review. I think we all want to make sure that any new program that we implement is incredibly clean and clear, that the criteria is fair. So my understanding, again, from speaking to his staff right before coming on, is that the NIF, or the Neighborhood Investment Fund, is not going to be stopped. They just want to make sure, and we really want to make sure, that it is implemented in a way that's transparent, equitable, and that, you know, again, really serves the folks that need it the most.
Great. Baltimore City Councilman Zeke Cohen, sir, that's all the time we have. I appreciate your time, and we look forward to staying in touch. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me on, Tom. Appreciate it.
I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. By the way, coming up tomorrow, it's Midday at the Movies. Jed Dietz, the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival, joins me along with filmmaker Alyssa Blount Moorhead. We'll talk about the new Jordan Peele film, Us, which has taken the cinematic world by storm. And we'll look ahead to the weekend to see what movies we should make a point to see. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick will review Henry IV Part 2 at the Chesapeake Shakespeare Company. That's all coming up tomorrow on Midday. If you just joined us today, we're talking about the scandal surrounding Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh. We turn now to Baltimore City Councilwoman Sharon Green Middleton. As the council's vice president, she is now the ex officio city council president, as Jack Young has become the ex officio mayor and is overseeing the day-to-day operations of the city in Mayor Pugh's absence. Councilwoman, welcome to Midday. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you too, Tom.
Have you spoken to the mayor in the last 5-10 days?
Once. I got just a quick call basically sharing that she was taking a leave of absence for her illness.
And did you discuss how long that leave of absence might be and what the ramifications are? Are you among the folks calling for the mayor to resign?
I'm focused on moving the city forward. So all that to say, this has admittedly been a difficult couple of weeks for Baltimore City, but I feel that Baltimore is a strong and resilient city that has faced difficulties in the past and has bounced back. The mayor made a decision I believe she currently believes is in the best interest of the city. My hope is that she will do what is necessary for her to recover physically and for Baltimore to begin the healing process. And I feel that I'm confident and want to help in that process.
Is it possible for the process to begin if Ms. Pugh is the mayor?
Well, the healing process, I stand with ex officio, now ex officio Mayor Jack Young, and the entire city council and our commitment to work night and day to bring confidence and faith back into government and to operate in an ethical and transparent manner.
And in addition to the request by Councilman Dorsey, Councilwoman Sneed, for the Inspector General to take a look into, in particular, the Kaiser Permanente deal with Mayor Pugh about the books, do you anticipate or do you recommend any other specific actions that the council should take at this time in the context of the fact that the state prosecutor is also launching an investigation?
My focus is on keeping the council moving forward. And just continue to carry out the business that's before the council. And we have that includes the upcoming budget hearings and the continued work with our new police commissioner on to reduce violent crime. My reputation in the community is well earned for listening and responding to the needs of residents in my district and across the city. So I have been honored to serve as vice president of the council, and I also serve in statewide capacity as the first vice president of the Maryland Association of Counties. So I'm just continuing to keep the council moving forward with the needs that we are responsible for.
And in the press conference yesterday, ex officio Mayor Young mentioned that he was going to hit pause on a few of the initiatives. We just talked to Zeke Cohen about the neighborhood reinvestment program. Can you tell us what that means? Can you tell us if there are other programs in particular that you think are important to step back from for the moment and take a deep breath and reexamine?
Well, Jack Young and I still plan to, we haven't had a sit-down meeting completely yet, and we plan to do that. I just finished my chairing the Board of Estimates meeting this morning. In fact, it was my second. I've done it before in Jack's absence, one time when he was council president. So I'm just going to continue and focus on what needs to be done and what and keeping the council as a whole moving together.
Do you have any concerns about the involvement of the Associated Black Charities in this situation? They have returned more than $10,000 that they collected on behalf of Mayor Pugh to purchase these books. They, of course, have been given the nod to oversee the Children and Youth Fund. That's a very, very expensive operation, some $12 million. They're taking a fee to run that program of more than $1 million. Do you have any concerns about their efficacy and their behavior in terms of ethics in running the Children and Youth Fund or in their involvement in the current situation involving the mayor and her books?
I have concerns about this whole, the entire subject. I'm not at liberty to talk specifics, but I'm hoping that we can, that in fact there are meetings and conversations taking place, and again, I want to work together to get these things ironed out. I'm definitely concerned, and you know, it's our job as elected officials to also just do our part in trying to get these issues resolved.
You know, as you know, because I'm sure you're hearing from your constituents, all of us around town, people have been here for a long time, you know, they sort of shake their heads and wonder how this could happen. I wonder, you've known Mayor Pugh for a long time. Has she ever mentioned to you the fact that she has this company that makes children's clothing and that she's written children's books? Is this something that you were aware of, 10 years ago, 15 years ago?
I'm definitely aware of the books, yes.
And you were aware of them in early 2000s, for example?
Yes. I've seen the books. She's definitely, shared them at speaking engagements.
And in terms of, because we just have a couple minutes left, in terms of people's perception of this sort of pay-to-play culture at City Hall with the Board of Estimates and approving contracts while the people under consideration like Kaiser Permanente are doing things like purchasing tens of thousands of dollars worth of these books. What is the capacity of the City Council and of you now in the position of being the ex officio president of the City Council to guard against this kind of thing happening in the future? Is it a matter of looking at disclosure regulations or statutes having to do with conflict of interest? I mean, what do you see going forward would be an appropriate way for the City Council to address this kind of behavior by other public officials?
I'm sure, as you know, I'm in my third term as an elected official, and there is a system in place that I respect and that I follow. Just an example, as before the chairing of the Board of Estimates meeting, I read and go over things to see if there is a conflict, and I make note of it so that I'm not involved or take a vote on it. You know, I can only speak of, myself following rules and regulations. And, you know, like I said, there is a system in place, and I continue to follow the system that we have.
Ex officio City Council President Sharon Green Middleton. Councilwoman, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. When we come back from a quick break, George Nielsen, the former Baltimore City solicitor, joins me. Stay with us.
This is 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. And now the perspective of a former Baltimore City solicitor. That's the city's lawyer. George Nielsen was the city's lawyer when Mayor Sheila Dixon was forced to resign from office in 2010. He served for a while in the administration of Dixon's successor, Stephanie Rawlings Blake. When Rawlings Blake fired Mr. Nielsen in 2016 over a contract with a lawyer who was associated with hate groups in the 1980s and 90s, that decision was very controversial. George Nielsen joins me on the line from his home on the Eastern Shore. Mr. Nielsen, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom. Nice to be with you.
So you were there in 2010 when then-Mayor Dixon was going through a very difficult time and the city was going through a difficult time. Is what's going on now reminiscent to you, redolent of what happened back in 2010? What could we learn from 2010 that could inform our understanding of what's going on now?
Well, reminiscent would be, I suppose, an appropriate word, although it was a little bit different. Because as you will recall, back then, it wasn't, there wasn't a period of temporary absence. And there was, while there was a period of where investigations were ongoing, Mayor Dixon continued to do her job and actually do it quite well. And then she went to trial and was convicted and sentencing approached. And we had to deal with the issue of what happens to the mayor and her holding that position in the event of a guilty verdict by the jury, which we had before us.
Did you advise Mary Dixon in any way as she was negotiating? She had, certainly had personal counsel, but she was negotiating with the prosecutor. And as we understand it, part of the deal she reached was, did require her to resign from office. Did you have any conversations with her prior to that decision being made?
Yes. I had conversations with the mayor and also with her counsel, although I was not involved in the plea discussions and for that matter not particularly aware that they were going on, but I think everybody suspected that they might be. But I did tell them what the law provided and what the options seemed to be, and then they went ahead and made the deal they made with the prosecutors.
I mean, given your long experience in city government and also in the Maryland Attorney General's office and other places, what's the real practical effect on the daily workings of the city government now that we have an ex officio mayor and an ex officio city council president?
Well, I'm not, we haven't dealt with that, this sort of temporary situation, at least not during my tenure. During my tenure, Martin O'Malley went off to be governor and Mayor Dixon promptly assumed the reins of government. So this situation where Jack Young is temporarily the mayor is unusual. I should add also that when I was back in state government, I was deputy attorney general when Marvin Mandel was convicted, and then pursuant to the state constitutional provision, which also applies to mayors of Baltimore City, he was suspended, went off on appeal, won his appeal, and came back to office about a month before his term ended. So I've had the misfortune of experiencing this kind of problem from both the state and the city level.
Yeah, you've been in the middle of the mix on all sorts of interesting
situations.
I'm just
so much blessed to be on the Eastern Shore now while the city is going through the problem yet again. For a change, I'm not there at the time.
Yeah. There are a lot of people, calling for the mayor to resign. There are people who are not saying she should resign, but hoping that the city can move forward and that she would do what's best for the city, which sounds to me like code for please resign. If she decides not to do that, which is, of course, very possible, what would have to happen if people still felt strongly that she should be removed from office? What's your understanding about the city council's capacity to remove the mayor or the governor's capacity to remove the mayor? What's the law about that?
The law is pretty clear that neither the governor nor the city council has the authority to remove the mayor. We do, under the charter, place authority to remove the comptroller in the hands of the city council and the mayor acting together. And as you may recall, some decades ago, we had an issue with the behavior of one of our comptrollers. I don't know whether that provision of the charter came along after that or before it. But right now, the comptroller could be removed in the event of certain misconduct, but not the mayor. That's yet another example, I guess, of what they say is Baltimore's strong mayor system. So if the current mayor decides not to resign and presumably returns when her illness is a thing of the past. You know, she'll have some difficulties, but being removed by either the city council or the governor is not one of them. The only ways that the mayor could then be removed would be if she were charged with a criminal offense as a result of the state prosecutor's investigation or otherwise, or if her term ended and she lost a reelection effort or decided not to run.
And Mr. Nielsen, we're getting some breaking news as we speak. Jane Miller at WBAL Television, as well as the Baltimore Sun, are reporting that ex officio Mayor Jack Young has directed the city solicitor to pull the last 90 contracts approved by the Board of Estimates. Mayor Catherine Pugh voted on the Kaiser Permanente contract while she was receiving Kaiser money to her LLC, the Healthy Holly Company.
Right.
Your reaction to the fact that that, in fact, appears to be the case, that she was voting on this city contract with Kaiser Permanente at a time that she was receiving money from them for her books. You had to advise Stephanie Rawlings Blake in a matter back in 2011 concerning Johns Hopkins community physicians because of a connection she had through her husband.
Correct.
What advice should the mayor have received, or do you have any speculation as to why perhaps the mayor did not receive any advice from the current city solicitor about this matter?
Well, all I can say is that the administration of the recusal decisions by mayors is traditionally made, that's in the hands of the mayor and her staff. And regularly, both the mayors that I served with would have their staff people review the very often very lengthy budgets in some detail and provide typically a memo in writing to the mayor, advising the mayor which matter she should recuse herself on. If the mayor notices something that the staff didn't pick up, then she would say, I think I also need to recuse myself on A and B. But typically, the solicitor wouldn't get involved in that. So the fact that the current solicitor didn't pick that up wouldn't be of any concern to me. And, of course, the fact that the mayor had this business relationship, if you will, with Kaiser Permanente, I take it, was not generally known. So if it wasn't known to the mayor's staff, they couldn't have advised her to recuse herself. It would have really been up to the mayor, who obviously did know that she had this a book publishing arrangement with Kaiser Permanente, to not, to abstain from that vote. And presumably Kaiser Permanente would have been approved by a 4-0 vote.
And from what you know from public reporting about this arrangement with Kaiser Permanente, does it reach the bar? Does it meet the bar, in your opinion, for recusal? Should the mayor have definitely recused herself in this particular situation?
Well, on the one hand, you could say it's such a big contract and Kaiser Permanente has had it for so many years, it didn't really make any difference. But the fact of the matter is that the mayor had this, from what I gather, a fairly recently arranged deal with Kaiser Permanente for them to buy some of her books. So I would say that the mayor should have abstained. I read somewhere that people were worried that maybe that meant the Kaiser Permanente contract would be voided. I don't think that would be the remedy. I think the remedy would be something critical of the mayor, but I don't think you would throw out a contract of that nature and under those circumstances, because the mayor, whose job it was to decide whether to abstain or not, the fact that she didn't, I wouldn't think would terminate the contract.
This tweet from Jane Miller at WBAL says that Mr. Young has directed Mr. Davis, the current city solicitor, to pull the last 90 contracts approved by the Board of Estimate. Do you know what that means? I mean, does that mean that all of a sudden these contracts are on hold, or they are voided and need to be approved again?
No. I don't have the words in front of me, but I would interpret that as being reactive to the city council members who filed, as I understand it, a complaint with the inspector general, who was serving now and has been there for a year and a half or so, directing him to investigate the contracting situation, Kaiser Permanente and Associated Black Charities and So the council president has simply said, pull so that we can review the other contracts, within recent, however he defines the total number to be reviewed. But I don't think he's saying pulling as in terminate or cancel them.
Okay, yeah, because this is Zeke Cohen from the city council said that he'd had a conversation about that very thing. They were just going to review these contracts for the state prosecutor has launched an investigation at the behest of the governor. Do you think that that's the proper jurisdiction for this? Is it a good idea for the city inspector general to get involved in addition to the state prosecutor? We also hear from Al Redmer, the Maryland insurance commissioner, that he's thinking of launching an investigation into the insurance companies that are involved in this matter. What's your opinion about who and how many different entities should be looking into this?
Well, just go to Washington and ask the same question down there.
Yeah.
But it's perfectly appropriate to ask the inspector general to take a look. My understanding is that the inspector general's look is going to be narrower and with a somewhat different focus. I would presume that the inspector general, who I believe I'm right in saying once upon a time worked at the state prosecutor's office, would coordinate with the state prosecutor, and they would have an understanding as to what the IG is going to look at and what the state prosecutor would focus on. You also have an odd situation where, unless things have changed, and I haven't seen this written about it much in the press, the state prosecutor gave notice a couple months ago that he was going to be retiring from his job in several months, and so that, I don't know whether that has changed at all or not, but that might be another reason for getting the IG involved, because of some uncertainty about turnover in the state prosecutor's office. Yeah. I would think that the state prosecutor, just as it was the more logical choice with Mayor Dixon, is probably the more logical choice as opposed to the state's attorney's office in the city.
When Mayor Dixon was obliged to resign as part of her plea agreement, she was, by law, eligible to receive her pension. I believe it's about $85,000 a year. She's received it annually ever since. If, for some reason, Mayor Pugh does resign or leaves office for whatever reason, is there any scenario in which she would be ineligible to collect a state pension? She served in the Maryland General Assembly, or a city pension?
It's very unlikely. Certainly, if she were to resign, that would not affect her eligibility to receive a pension. We don't have in Maryland what some jurisdictions have, and that is a clawback provision that enables the pension system to prevent somebody who even was convicted of a crime from receiving their pension. So it's unlikely that whatever the path is that Mayor Pugh's situation follows, it's unlikely that it would cost her pension either at the state level or at the city.
What strikes you from what you know from press accounts about the mayor's involvement with this, with these various entities and having them buy her books? Are these simply ethical violations, or are these criminal violations as far as you can tell? Do you have enough information to be able to understand them one way or the other?
I don't have enough factual information, and I don't think anybody does. I have read the press coverage that says Jimmy Cabezas, who is the very, very competent and long investigator for the state prosecutor's office, who initiated the first complaint, said, and I think he's got this right, looking at the state ethics law, potential state ethics law violations, that it depends on the circumstances, and it depends on the extent to which it was a knowing violation or an innocent violation or an inadvertent one. If it was innocent or inadvertent, it would be treated administratively as an ethics violation with appropriate penalties other than criminal violations. But if it was knowing and if it was conscious, and you'd have to look at a lot of circumstances to decide that, it could be treated as perjury.
George Nielsen is the former Baltimore City Solicitor. Mr. Nielsen, your erudition has been much appreciated, and it's been very enlightening. I hope we can talk again sometime. Thanks.
Well, I hope it's under happier circumstances.
Indeed. I do as
sure.
Well. Thank you
Thanks
so much.
Okay.
Next up, a view from Annapolis with a delegate who ran against Catherine Pugh for mayor 3 years ago. Delegate Nick Mosby joins me after this quick break. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. Stay with us.
This is 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, we're talking about Mayor Catherine Pugh and the Healthy Holly scandal. The city Ms. Pugh was elected to lead is reeling from this latest scandal in Baltimore City Hall. My next guest is Delegate Nick Mosby. He represents the 40th District in Baltimore in the Maryland General Assembly. He was one of 13 candidates in the 2016 Democratic primary for mayor. That included Sheila Dixon, the last mayor who was forced to resign from office, and Catherine Pugh, who herself is under increasing pressure to resign amid questions about unethical behavior and abusing her public position. Delegate, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on, Tom.
So are you willing to jump on the bandwagon of folks that are saying that Mayor Pugh should resign?
I wouldn't classify by a bandwagon. I mean, Tom, our city is in crisis, you know, and the citizens of Baltimore just frankly deserve better. You know, I want the mayor to take care of her health needs as well as her personal needs, but I just think it's the honorable thing to do to step aside, allow the city to have one leader with leadership, and to provide the opportunity for us to coalesce behind an individual, you know, being Jack Young, the current ex officio mayor. I think Mary Pat Clark, I watched an interview yesterday, kind of said it best. She said, one mayor is enough. And, you know, this idea that, you know, our mayor is on leave, that's, you know, who knows how long that leave is, and we have an ex officio mayor who's kind of running the day-to-day operations for a city like Baltimore, for the complex issues, for the state that we're in crisis, through all the churn and changes that we've seen over the past couple of years. I just think it's the honorable thing to do for her to step aside and allow Jack to lead.
The city Senate delegation in the Maryland Senate said no, they did not endorse the idea of Mayor Pugh resigning. Has the House delegation made a formal statement about it? And the larger question is, do you think there is consensus among the city delegation in both the House and the Senate on this issue as to whether or not Mayor Pugh should step aside?
No, I don't think there's consensus anywhere. I think, you know, there's very different opinions. Some opinions folks are just probably rather, you know, keep to themselves. But, you know, again, I just think that this timing is just that important, that it's not a time to be quiet. It's a time to say what's the right thing to do. And how it's not an easy thing to say or an easy thing to do. It's just the right thing to do. Right? Our city, you know, desperately needs some level of stability.
How could this have been avoided? I mean, are ethics rules sufficient? Are they effective? Do they need to be reviewed? Do they need to be changed? There are, of course, a couple of bills now making their way through the House and the Senate concerning the University of Maryland medical system in particular. But in the larger context, what can the legislature do in Annapolis to avoid this kind of thing in the future?
I mean, it's really challenging to pinpoint, you know, certain one or two things. What I will say is, you know, the past couple of years I've had some pretty poignant legislation around campaign finance and ensuring that, you know, these ghost companies and these fraudulent campaign reports and the straw type of donations that we've seen that we know about or that we suspect, that we kind of cancel and cut that out. I'm really proud of my bill last year that passed both House and Senate and is law, and I'm proud of House Bill 1025, which I expect to be completely passed this year. But, you know, I mean, there's always room for an improvement. I guess what the voters want, what citizens want, is a leader or leaders that, you know, have a certain level of integrity and trust. And, you know, unfortunately, we've been down this road far too many times in the city of Baltimore. And that's why I think right now, more than ever, we just need some stability. And, you know, I would urge the mayor, you know, to take care of her health, take care of her personal issues, but allow Jack to truly be the leader of the city, and let's coalesce behind him and support him.
As I mentioned, you ran in the Democratic primary in 2016.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, well, ancient history, I know. But are you contemplating another run for mayor, and does the current situation inform that contemplation in any particular way?
Tom, people have been texting me, calling me. What I've told folks is I'm focusing on finishing up this term, this legislative session down here. You know, we've gotten a lot done down here. I've gotten a lot of bills passed. I'm really proud of some of the money and some of the resources we're bringing back to the 40th District and to the city, and some of the impactful legislation that I've been able to get approved on both sides. So, you know, that's my focus, is just closing out the session as strong as possible. You know, it's a decision that I would have to make with not just myself, but with my family. So it's something that, you know, clearly I'm not counting out, but it's nothing that, you know, I have worked on or have plans for at this point.
We just have a few days left until sine die on Monday. Talk about the reputational hit that the city is taking because of this in Annapolis. You're going to need legislators from outside the city, sometimes well outside the city, to pass some of this legislation. We've got Pimlico on people's minds. We've got a bill to support the Baltimore Symphony in the city. We've got any number of other bills. I mean, those are just two off the top of my head. But in terms of how legislators from the Eastern Shore and Western Maryland are understanding and thinking about the city because of this, what's your take?
Tom, that's an excellent point. It kind of gets back to kind of the crux of the matter that I've been seeing the entire time of, you know, stability. And, you know, when folks already look at Baltimore City, unfortunately, they forget about the historical challenges that, you know, present-day outcomes are reflecting. But when they look at the situation like with the current scandal, you know, they feel like sometimes Baltimore City gets more than enough of the resources, the quote-unquote shared resources, and sometimes it's a waste of money, and sometimes the accountability is not necessarily there in the city of Baltimore. It's disproportional to what we see around the state. We know that as Baltimoreans, that's not necessarily true, but it's really hard for us to get down here and kind of pitch that story and ensure that we're able to show our colleagues the importance of many of these things, some of the things that you mentioned. So it does make the job of working in Annapolis, being from Baltimore City, that much more challenging. But again, back to my point, that's why it's really important for us to coalesce around a leader, show folks that we have things under control, that we understand and know that we are a resilient city, that we must and can do better, and that the citizens deserve better. And that's what I'm working to be a part of. That's what the plan that I want to work on with my colleagues and my partners in city government.
What about the reputational hit to the General Assembly? I mean, the Speaker of the House serves on the University of Maryland Medical System Board. A representative of the Senate President serve on this board, and doesn't appear that either of those two folks knew anything about this arrangement, not only with Mayor Pugh or then-Senator Pugh when this began, but, you know, eight other members of the board who were doing business, sometimes multi-million-dollar business, while serving on the board. I mean, is there somebody who's asleep at the wheel here?
I mean, how folks could draw inference to that, I think we would need, you know, a lot more detail to really understand how the relationships and the roles are played out and how some of these sole source contracts were given out. You know, it's something that I can't necessarily speak to. I'm definitely interested in understanding and knowing. I know that, you know, we're going to pass tougher regulations from an UMS perspective to ensure that there's more disclosure, ensure that there's more transparency. But as it relates to who was asleep at the wheel, who knew about what, who should have known about what, you know, I would hope that through the audit and all that we get out with the findings and the investigation, that we'll be able to understand and know that better. And then if additional action is needed, or if additional rules or regulations or policies are needed to be developed, that, you know, we act accordingly.
Delegate Nick Mosby represents Baltimore City in the 40th District in the Maryland House of Delegates. Delegate, thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Always great talking to you, Tom.
Coming up tomorrow, it's Midday at the Movies with the filmmaker Alyssa Blount-Moorhead and Jed Dietz, the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival, here on Midday. Plus, a review of Henry IV, Part 2 at the Chesapeake Shakespeare Company. Lunch today was provided by the Baltimore Chef Shop there on the Avenue in Hamden. They offer a variety of private events and cooking classes for kids and adults, including baking and international cuisines. Tonight, they're offering a class in Louisiana Cajun cooking, and tomorrow night, it's Spanish tapas and Indian cuisine. You can find out more on the web at BaltimoreChefShop.com. That's it for us today. Jamila Krempel is up next after the news at the top of the hour. She's the guest host of this month's Life in the Balance. We hope you'll stay tuned for that. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
This is 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station.